Welcome back to episode 130 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here on Chess Journeys, we love to explore the glories of ratings gain like our guest last week, Will. But we also dive into the realities of chess, which are the plateaus and the dreaded pits of despair below that. If you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon Chess Journeys. I want to thank our queen level supporters, Blundergoat, Tim Everett, Scott D4, B6 Joe, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Donna Rich Burgess, Brandon Hallside, Jeff Peterson, Tobias Rex, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich, Bradley Fenner, Fletcher Ray, Nathan Peterson, Christian Glaw, and our king level supporter, Ian Samples. If you want to appear on the show, a great way to do that is to fill out the Google form in the show notes. We all want to hear your stories. If you are interested in getting better at chess, well, I suggest Noel Studer's Next Level Training Program. You can use the code in the show notes below to help support the show. And finally, I want to thank the people who recently submitted some reviews to Apple iTunes podcast stuff. We hadn't gotten any reviews in a while, so thanks so much for that. And today, I want to bring in our guest. We have Chris. He's a dedicated chess improver. He runs a chess club at the local library. I'm curious to hear about that. Chris, welcome to the show. And have you had a chance to play any chess yet today?
Thanks for having me. And yep, I played a rapid game right before hopping on here, actually, and I had a lesson with my coach.
Ooh, okay, nice. Lots of good stuff happening. When you say a rapid game, what's your time control for rapid?
I'm a 15 plus 10 kind of guy.
Okay, me too. I actually have two separate, this is going to sound so weird. On chess.com, I play 15-10 exclusively. And then on Lee Chess, I play 10-5 exclusively. So it's like, if I have less time, I do that. And then that way I know like what my different ratings correspond to. I don't know if that makes me a madman or not, Chris.
No, that's so funny. I do the same thing. Lee Chess, I'm 10-5.
Oh,
yeah.
We're rapid twins. Why do you do it that way? I want to know if I'm just a crazy person here or what's going on.
So I baby my chess.com rapid rating. Okay. Unfortunately, I don't play a lot of rated games. So the closest thing I have is my chess.com. And on Lee Chess, I allow myself to kick back a little bit. I'm not a big blitz player, so the 10-5 is the closest thing I get to my enjoyment chess,
okay,
rather than like sense. Focusing on improvement.
So like chess.com is your barometer for improvement. Lee Chess is where you go to just play some chess.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, I think that's fair. I think I was in a pretty similar spot when I first started back, and then when I found a nice over-the-board club where I could play every single week, that became more my barometer, and chess.com sort of slid back to like, you know, the backup barometer. When things are going bad over the board, at least I can say I'm doing okay in my rapid rating. All right, Chris. We'll get back to the coaching in a bit, but let's start with your backstory. When did you pick up chess? Were you a little kid? What's going on there?
Sure. Like a lot of people, I started playing as a kid. Like I learned how the pieces moved, but I wasn't, you know, very serious about it. And then in 2017, I was offered a job as a summer camp counselor, where a big part of it would be that I was going to run the chess program there. Oh, and wow. Of course, I told, you know, the person I was interviewing with, yeah, I can play chess, no problem. I can teach kids how to do that, because I didn't know that there was a lot of depth to it. And, you know, like
I know
you
how
just
the
move
knight
the pieces.
Moves perfectly.
Exactly. Yeah. So I accept the job offer and I start watching some YouTube videos about chess and I realize that I have made a massive mistake. And so I was watching people like John Bartholomew and, well, really mainly him. Back in those days, there wasn't a whole ton of chess content creation. Mm-hmm. And so I got nervous right away, like, oh, I'm way in over my head. They're going to know that I'm not a chess player, this, that, and the other. So I decided to take a couple lessons with a coach. And it made things better. I was batting at around roughly 800 rapid on chess.com, which, you know, is not too bad, but, you know, it worked for that summer job.
Yeah.
It was a bunch of kids who needed to learn how the pieces moved for the most part. So I was able to do just fine. And then from there on out, I fell in love with the game and, I went back to that camp for a couple of years more to be the chess instructor, but really, I was, you know, playing year round.
Yeah, so it sounds like your chess journey started with requiring the confidence that was needed to be a chess teacher. You probably already had enough skills to teach the kids how the pieces moved, but you were worried.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I can understand that. I, too, became a chess instructor very early on in my chess career. I was about 1,000 over the board when I started, and I was quite nervous about it, and I was so much better than those kids. I had nothing to worry about.
Yeah, and I'm a very competitive person. I come from competitive esports in college, so I wanted to come into this camp job knowing that these kids weren't just going to beat up on me over the board, because then, like, why am I the teacher, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think the person who's had the hardest time is there's one of these chess programs at my daughter's school where, you know, a group comes in and the coaches, you know, they're teaching like K through five kids who don't know how to play chess. So they're not like experienced chess players. And on the first day, my daughter's like, yeah, I play rated USCF games every week. And I'm sure those coaches are like, oh, is this person going to be better than me? It's a possibility.
Right.
All right. Well, what esport did you play in college?
League of Legends.
Oh, okay. And how deep did you go?
I played for our Division II team. So the way it breaks down is that each school can field as many teams as they want, but there's only one Division I team.
Okay.
And then once the coach for the Division I team graduated, I stepped into that role. So it was primarily coaching.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
You want to hear my League of Legends story?
Please.
Okay. So when I started teaching high school, I started hearing all these kids talking about how fun this was like 7 years ago. And I was like, that sounds great. And I booted it up and it was so much fun. I was an Ash main. I had no idea what I was doing and I was having a blast. And then I got to like level 20 and something changed. And the people suddenly started criticizing my mother and where I was from and saying any horrible thing they could think of to me. And I was like, this is a lot less fun now.
That's the community. I've taken a step back for that reason.
Okay. I was so surprised because at the lower levels, when everyone's just a beginner, no one cares, right? You're just having a great time. And it was like, I wasn't even to the competitive part yet. I was just getting closer and people were like, all right, serious business now, guy. So yeah, that was disappointing. I don't have that happen at all in the chess world. No one has once made comments on my mother that they hadn't met yet.
So. Sometimes you got to be careful with online play where people, you know, hide behind their screen and they do say stuff like that.
Good point. I have all chats off on all servers. I have no interest in what you have to say to me during the game.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Every now and then I do chat people in a nice way. Like I'll be like, wow, that was such a great comeback you made. Or like, I really wasn't expecting that. And they almost never respond. And I'm sure it's because they have it muted and they're like, oh, this jerk saying rude things to me. And I'm like, no, I just want to let you know that was a great game.
I will definitely use the quick chats on League Chess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can say like, hello, good game, or good luck, have fun. And it's just a button that you press and it'll type it out for you. Yeah.
Okay, that seems reasonable. Yeah. Okay. All right, so you pick up chess. You realize you're probably in over your head. You take a couple early lessons. You find John Bartholomew online. You start around 800. What's your next step then? You said you started going pretty deep pretty fast. Well, what did you do next?
I was playing a ton of games stagnating around that 800 to 1,000 level for probably 1 or 2 years.
Just
because I was just playing games and not really trying to learn, you know, because it was and is a fun hobby for me. I started getting better by working at Tactics. And at a certain point, I realized that I'm probably going to be doing this for a while. I should maybe start caring to get better. And I started working with coaches about a year into the journey regularly after the first coaching session that I had.
Okay. I have to ask you this question.
Sure.
So for a year, you just had fun playing chess and didn't worry about getting better and played a lot. Is that your favorite year in chess?
Well, I lost a lot of games, and being a competitive person, I wasn't loving that, but it was fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of dream of a day where I'm like, you know what I do with chess? I just play and have fun with it. Oh my God. I can't even imagine that. Okay. So I'm a little surprised to hear that you played a ton for a year and didn't really get better. It feels like people that really play a lot tend to get better faster. Do you think it was because you weren't really looking at your games at all? You were just kind of banging them out?
I was playing a lot of Blitz.
Oh, okay.
Mostly. Yeah, not reviewing, just playing games and having fun.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. So So you are not the poster child for playing Endless Blitz without review makes you better at chess.
Correct. I am the opposite of that.
Okay. It seems like some of the kids, it does work somehow. It's like, what do you do? And they're like, I play Blitz, you know, an hour a day, every day, and then I get way better. And you're like,
oh. I was already a grown adult when I started getting into it. So it's a little different, I think.
Okay. Gotcha. So you felt like you needed some amount of study. For you, it sounds like you jumped into tactical work. What inspired you to work on tactics versus some of the other stuff?
Well, all of my games were being decided by tactics and blunders. Uh-huh. So it seemed to me at the time, and John Bartholomew was saying this, I watched a lot of his fundamental series where he states that you really can't get better at chess if you're hanging your queen every game. Like, you have to cut out those blunders, and a good way to do that is by hammering your tactics.
Okay, cool. So you did hammer your tactics. What resources did you use to do that?
So I picked up a chess.com gold membership pretty early on, and that offered me 25 tactics a day.
Okay.
So that's where I was doing that primarily. And then much later, I've started, working through books and Chessable and all that good stuff.
Okay. That's what I did as well for my first year in chess. I got the gold membership. And this was my reasoning. I was thinking about getting a higher one, but I was like, no. This way, I'm going to force myself to do my maximum tactics every single day. And because there's a maximum, you know, I can just keep doing it till I hit that max. And that's when I stop. So I did like 25 a day for a year.
Yeah. And what's great is I'm grandfathered into the old gold plan. They changed up what the offering was.
Yeah.
So I still get all the benefits of my old plan nice. Compared to what it is now, which is super nice.
Oh, that's great. Okay. So tactics. Doing a lot of tactics. Did you see improvement sort of right away? Did it take a while? How'd that work for you?
Yeah. So according to my graph, I shot up relatively quickly at pretty much the moment where I started thinking that I should start taking chess more seriously as a main hobby. It coincided with the time of me being done playing League of Legends.
Maybe you were just a happier person.
You know what? It could have been it. Yeah, so definitely tactical work. And the results just started coming in, and the games were being won because I was picking up the free knight every now and again instead of me giving it away.
Yeah, and it's such a maddening part of any chess player's journey, I think, is when it's like games are so decided by blunders and basic tactics that you're kind of like, I would love to like do some other stuff, like read a strategy book, but what's the point? Like, I just have to stop hanging my pieces, and man, that can be so hard.
Right. Yeah. And then soon enough, I was hitting around 1200 on chess.com, which my first like main coach told me that this was like the first big hurdle that a lot of folks hit and like a big roadblock. And I might've let that psychologically get to me because I stayed 1200 for a little while too. Yeah, eventually things just started falling into place. I did more and more tactical work, and I ended up pretty much where I am now with very limited work on strategy, I would say.
Okay, so let's go back to 1200 real quick. What do you feel like defined being a 1200 for you? Like, were you blundering a lot less but still making like that one blunder that was holding you back? Like, what do you feel like kept you at 1200?
Yeah, I think one move blunders are still the primary thing that are that's deciding games at that level.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like when I play 1200s, they play quite well, and there's one moment. And if you miss it, then you might be in trouble and they might beat you. But usually I find 1200s will give you one pretty basic tactic that if you find it, you win.
Right. I could agree with that.
Okay. So what do you feel like you did to stop that? Was it just simply hammering tactics? Was there any types of tactics that you focused on? Did you make like a blunder checklist? Like, how did you weed out these blunders?
Yeah, so my coach gave me a pre-move checklist, which I followed long enough so that it's almost subconscious at this point. So you look at all of the, you know, the obvious checks, captures, threats in the position, but also is anything of yours hanging right now? And you just go through that framework each and every move, and you find that you're blundering a lot less pieces. And the hope is that your opponent is not doing that, so you can take all their free stuff.
And when you say hanging right now, do you mean literally hanging, like I have a knight hanging with a bishop attacking it, or do you mean like undefended pieces?
I mean hanging.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I think at that level, it's still possible to just drop pieces.
Yeah, I agree. Just yesterday, I was playing a blitz game. I made this really nice move, and they attacked my queen with their knight. And I was like, huh, this is a tough choice. I can move my queen to b6, or I can counterattack their knight with my bishop, force it to move, and then move my queen. And so I moved my bishop, and they took my queen.
Yep.
So that was.
We are not immune to those. Never will be.
I find that that kind of stuff very rarely happens in rapid games. But in blitz games, there's like this overload happening, right? There's so much so quickly that it jiggles things loose sometimes, and I still drop pieces, and it's
yeah,
really
either
hard.
That or you're real deep in some calculation. And yes. You forget one small aspect of it and it all falls apart.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't been blundering pieces in over the board or rapid, but boy, 3-2 blitz is a whole another ball game. So I guess I have a question for you. You said you got this checklist now, and you used to be playing blitz. I have to assume at some point there was a transition to rapid where you could actually enact a checklist.
Yeah, so once I started working with my first like weekly coach, not the person I was working with before the summer camp, I pretty much put up blitz. Like I would play it from time to time if I just wanted to have fun, but rapid became the default. If I'm playing chess, I'm playing rapid, and that was 15-10.
Okay, gotcha. So you're giving yourself a fair amount of time to really think about your moves, go through a checklist, really focus on not blundering.
Yep.
Okay, and was that the focus, just like, hey, let's not blunder?
Yeah, I think honestly I think that's enough to get you pretty far.
It really is, which is so so maddening, because you're like, I want to be a good chess player, and you're like, just don't blunder your pieces, and you're like, but that's it. Like, yeah, that's kind of it. That's kind of the whole thing. Okay. So what motivated you to get a coach? I think a lot of people sort of wait till they get farther along in their journey or struggle a lot longer. What was it that made you think like, all right, it's time to get serious, time to get a coach?
Yeah, so with my League of Legends background, I had a coach because like it was a competitive team. So I already knew that like to get as good as something as you possibly can in the shortest amount of time, you should have someone more qualified than you teach you.
Okay. Seems reasonable.
Yeah. And I don't know, it just made sense to me because I'm also very competitive. I really like winning. A big part of me enjoying chess is the opportunity to win. And so if that means I should get a coach to win more, then I'm going to get a coach.
Okay. Gotcha. I guess I need to follow up on this winning thing then. Have you had any runs of losing or not making the gains you wanted and thought like maybe chess isn't the game for me if what I want to do is win all the time?
Yeah. Well, I'm under no delusions that I'm going to win all the time. It's just not feasible. But yeah, I will say that when I go on like quote unquote tilt, I tilt pretty hard. So right now, one of the things I'm working on is after I lose maybe 3 games in a row, maybe I'm done for the day.
Okay. That makes sense. All right. I know for myself, this sounds a lot like me in my early 20s where I pretty much chose the things I did were things I was good at and would mostly win at. And chess went really well at first, and I went from like 1,000 to 1,700 very quickly. But then, you know, I got to that point where I was more 50-50 because I had to work through the next plateau. That was really hard for me to be doing something where I would lose so much. And I think that was a big part of why I was like, I just need to find a different hobby that I can win mostly at.
Yeah, and I think it's important to have like a competitive hobby and then something that you can do to just relax.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. So you have something else you do and you're like, I just want to win and not have to worry.
Yeah, exactly. Or, and maybe winning and losing doesn't have to be a part of the equation. Maybe you like art or, you know, whatever it may be.
Gotcha. Just something that you enjoy.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. So for me, that's like Hearthstone. Because I don't play very much, I'm always really low rated. And then when I do play, I get to crush everyone. It's great.
I used to love Hearthstone.
Yeah. Hearthstone was one of the things I did very seriously and got to legendary and all that. So whenever I come back and I'm like chicken level or whatever, I'm like, well, this is easy.
That is one of those games that I did take a step back from because I could not get into Legend. I was always stuck in Diamond when that was the new system, and then whatever it was before that. So kudos to you. That's impressive.
I feel like it was less impressive and more what I found is when you got to that like rank 2 and 1, there was so much luck in like what the metagame was going to be like in that play session, right? And so it'd be like, I would just be like, well, if I'm winning, I just can't even log out because when I log in next time, the meta will be totally different and my deck will be terrible. It was
Sure.
really maddening. So yeah, it was fun when it went well, and when it didn't, it was not so much fun. Okay, so you got a coach. Did your coach? I guess my question is like, what was your coach working with you about then in this period where your main challenge is hanging pieces? Do you guys do a lot of like tactics puzzles and calculation work? What kind of stuff were you guys doing?
So we first worked on openings because at this point, when I first started working with him, I thought that the exchange Ruy Lopez won a pawn by force.
Wouldn't that be
So that's
amazing?
what I did. I'm
Oh, okay.
like, yes, free pawn. So he got me on the London system
Okay.
because of, easy to understand plans, and I played that for a while, and then a lot of it was just game review.
Okay.
In
Your
fact,
own
most of it was
games?
game review, my own games,
Okay.
yes.
Okay. So just going through your games and trying to learn, probably learning about strategy through your positions and pawn structures and stuff, right?
Yeah, so I would annotate the games prior to the session. That way, the thoughts are fresh, and then we
Okay.
see where the difference of, the stronger player and the weaker player's thoughts are.
Oh, so it's like the amateur's mind, but not with
Yes.
Jeremy Silman. Okay. How many games were you annotating each week?
I was playing a lot more than I was annotating, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But I'd probably bring 4 or 5 games to each lesson.
That's pretty cool. And how deep were your annotations?
Not very deep, very surface level.
Okay. Just kind of going through and being like, I didn't understand this position, or I'm out of my opening now. I didn't see this tactic, things like that.
Yeah, stuff like that. A lot of like seeing ghosts where I'm
Oh.
talking about my worries of the position, but really there's nothing concrete to back that up. Things like that.
Yeah, I find that that is such an important and I feel like underrated part of the annotation process. For me, the more I annotate my games, the more I realize it's less about like what's the truth of this position and more what were my worries over the board and why?
Sure.
Because those are the things that cause me to lose games, right? When it's like, I know from my repertoire I'm supposed to play knight c3, but I saw this and I got worried, and so I did this other move. And I think it's really useful to have that down so that when you look at your game with your coach and they're like, what? I thought you memorized this. And you're like,
Yep,
I did, but I got worried. Like a
just didn't
person
look
gets
right.
worried. Yeah. So I think that's a really useful part of annotating. Sounds like you do too.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So what other resources did you use to stop blending? Was it just chess.com tactics, or are there any chessable courses you want to point us to, or any books you used?
Yeah, so with regards to specifically not blundering, just playing a lot of games with the checklist, playing the longer time control games. What I tell my students now, and this is a Nate Solon piece of advice. He mentions that Lee Chess has a theme selector for their free puzzles, and you
Yeah.
can choose hanging pieces.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so the idea is that you crush those puzzles until you get none of them wrong in your session, and hopefully you have a better handle on not hanging your pieces.
Nice. Okay. So did you do a bunch of that?
I did not do that. By the time I heard that advice, I was pretty well over what, like the one move blunders, but I do tell that to a lot of people who ask for advice.
Okay. Does that seem to help them?
Oh yeah.
Okay. We got for my daughter was going through the same struggles. And so we got her Susan Polgar's, I think it's book three of her tactics series. It's about defensive puzzles.
Okay.
And when we say defensive puzzles, most of them are like, you have a hanging piece, do something.
Those are great.
It really helped her a lot, to be honest. She stopped, I mean, not exclusively stopped hanging pieces, but really cut down on it a lot.
Yep, that's big. As soon as you stop hanging pieces, you can start paying attention to the fun parts of chess.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so tactics, more tactics, figuring out how to not hang pieces, going over with your games with your coach.
Yeah, and that brought me basically to 1500 rapid
Okay.
on chess.com.
Well, that takes you to 1500. What's the next step then? What do you do once you get to that point where you're like, hey, you wake up one day and you're like, I haven't hung a piece in four games. This is amazing.
Yeah, so I mean, I started looking at some strategic stuff pretty much for the first time independently from my coach. And really, what that looked like was Yasser Seirawan's Winning Chess Strategies.
Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah, and getting that down. We were just talking about Amateur's Mind. I picked up Amateur's Mind, but at the time, I thought that was maybe a little advanced for 1500, but I certainly tried.
Okay.
And there's a lot of like pros that I hung on to, like best practice pieces of advice that to this day pretty much influence how I am playing like positions, like put your rooks on open files or throw your knights onto outposts, things like that.
Gotcha. Right. So some of like those basic big points.
Yeah, because
I
even
do
where
that
I'm
as
at now,
well.
yeah.
It drives my coach insane. Like, I'll just put a rook on an open file, and he's like, why'd you do that? I'm like, it's an open file. Why wouldn't I? And he's like, because there's a million things happening in this position. It's not only about open files, you fool. So, yeah, I feel like there's some really good things about those heuristics. And then, sometimes they lead us astray a bit.
Sure, there are sometimes the rules need to be broken, for sure.
Okay. Question about your strategy work. This is the big thing I've been wrestling with and talking to people about, which is, do you feel like when you read these strategy books, you knew more about chess, or do you feel like you were able to use that information in your game to do better at chess?
It's funny. So, especially with Winning Chess Strategies and Simple Chess by Michael Stein, there were these games that I would play right after reading the chapters, and the things that I read about would just pop out at me over and over again. But then I would read another chapter, and the stuff from the previous chapter, it felt like it would disappear, and I'd only be seeing the new stuff.
Yeah, me too. I hear you. It's
Yeah.
so interesting because I've been tempted to do things like just keep reading over the same chapter over and over, or like find another book. Like, let's say the chapter is about open files and I'm seeing how to use them better. And then maybe just reading it about it in another book and another book and seeing more examples. And like, is the answer to keep honing in on that one thing? Or are we to assume, Chris, that that is still working in the background as these other things are in the foreground? And I don't know the answer to
I believe our unconscious brain is taking care of something. At least I hope. I really do.
Yeah,
But
but
to
what if what
and
it's taking care of is like, trying to figure out what you're going to have for dinner after the game?
oh, it probably is. But to answer your questions, I definitely felt like I knew more than my playing level after reading strategy books.
Right. I think Simple Chess is one of the greatest examples of this, where there's some really challenging concepts in there, like space and the minority attack is a whole chapter. And I read that book and I was like, yeah, I know what a minority attack is. I know what a space advantage is. And then in my games, I couldn't use these things at all. And I was like,
Right.
okay, so I actually just know what the words are. I don't know how to use them in a chess game.
Yeah, definitions, not practicality.
Yeah, that's become one of the biggest things I've been focusing on. So how about for you? Do you feel like you were able to import a lot of that in? Are you still working on importing that in? How quick were you able to get that into your games?
Yeah, I mean, the work never stops. But I would like to imagine that it's been beneficial because I was continuing my same tactics regimen, but throwing in strategical, exercises, and my rating was going up. So I would
Okay.
like to hope that it was working out for me.
Yeah. I guess to me, one of the big ways to figure that out is, did you start getting less positions where you were just like, I don't know. I have no idea what I should do.
Well, I think part of that is really understanding your opening and the middle game plans that follow it too.
Yeah, I agree with that. So I guess let's talk about that for a minute then. So you said you learned the London. And when you say you learned the London, were you focused more on memorizing moves or memorizing plans?
So when I say learn the London, my coach showed me where the pieces went, and then we talked about other stuff.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So it was very surface level. This is the basic setup. You can get here in a bunch of different move orders. Mm-hmm. But I stuck with the London for maybe about a year or so. And then, you know, E4, Best Buy Test.
I have to ask this question. What stopped you from playing the London? Was it constant criticism that you see on the internet about it, or did you yourself decide you didn't want to play it anymore?
So this was like 2017 to 2018. There wasn't a lot of London criticism.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
This is pre-London hate.
Right. I was playing in a tournament hosted by my coach, and they were streaming it, and I was playing the London, and the chat was talking about how boring this game was going to be because it was the London. Yeah. So after that, I was like, oh, maybe I want to be an exciting chess player, which, what, you know, who knows what that means.
All right. Okay. So there was a little social pressure. Were you also just kind of feeling like it's time to shake things up? It's been a year. I should try something else.
Yeah. I mean, I think the London's a great opening, but it just seemed like I wasn't getting positions that I was not necessarily enjoying.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. That can be such a challenge too, is to figure out like, what do you enjoy? And I've been wrestling with this myself with my D4 opening I switched to. It's like, what do I enjoy more? Winning, understanding the position I'm in, or having a wild game?
Sure.
Right? Like, what brings me more joy? And I don't know. I sometimes I love having a wild, out of control E4 game where I don't know what's happening, but I'm not sure I want to do that over the board for like 6 hours.
Sure. Yeah. If you're going to commit to a long time control game. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what drew you to E4? Was it sort of the excitement, the dynamic play? Was it different positions, learning opportunities?
Yeah. I mean, all the different choices that were available. I ended up settling on the Scotch, and this was maybe around 2018, 2019.
Oh,
and
I'm so jealous. I want to play the Scotch as my main opening.
It's so much fun. I still play it.
Do you do like a long castle variation?
It depends.
Okay.
Yeah. If I'm feeling crazy, I'll play a Scotch Gambit, which is super fun. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, switching to E4, it was really just, the variety. It's something different. You know, you play around with a bunch of different openings, and you have more fun with some than others. And, you know, just by testing it out, I found out that I really liked it.
Okay. Yeah, it's funny for me. I really enjoy playing against E5. I love the subtlety of the Roy Lopez. I love the more open Scotch. And I hated playing against the Sicilian, the Caro Kann, the French, El Yekins. Like, there were so many openings. I was like, I hate playing all of them.
Yeah, I agree with you. The Scotch was really, or the E4 was really only fun when I got the Scotch and I got into the lines that I really knew, until I picked up a Chessable course for it, targeted specifically for beginners. And I know that it's not my rating anymore, but the lines that I'm getting based off of their recommendations are superb. And it gives you lines against like the Caro, the French, the Sicilian. Nice. So I'm able to enjoy those lines now while still, you know, loving the Scotch.
Oh, that's amazing. You want to give us the title for this, or is this your own secret course?
No, I can share it. No one's preparing against me. It is Ratsma's Opening Repertoire for Beginners.
Ratsma's. Is he the same guy who did the Checkmate Pattern Guide?
I don't believe so. This is a FIDE master. I'm not sure where from, but he has a few repertoires on Chessable for club players. And I tried that one, and the lines were very complex, and it was a really long course. And my memory could be a lot better. So this one's pretty short, and it gives you a repertoire for white and black within 300 lines.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of amazing. Can I ask you, like, what does it suggest against the Caro Kann?
Yeah, so it suggests the Panov attack. So it's exchange and then C4.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fun. And then what about the French? The French always drove me crazy.
This is what I love about this repertoire, and this is not an ad, I promise. you play a lot of the same moves over and over again. So this is the exchange in C4 as well.
Oh, okay, that's cool. So it's really
so you
trying
get
to
similar
kind of
ideas,
get you similar positions so you can get used to it.
Yep.
Okay, that seems great, because that was my other problem with e4 is I felt a lot like when I play e4, I'm letting my opponent decide what we're doing, and I have to know all of these different openings, and how could I possibly remember everything? It just felt sort of overwhelming at times. Okay,
For sure.
this seems like it makes it easier. Okay, so you're working on your openings, you get a repertoire. Are you working on this more at 1500, or is it mostly just strategy at 1500?
So it's still like tactics is still the main driver at 1500. I
Okay.
start looking at the opening though, and my opening study is not very succinct or deep. I picked this repertoire up quite a bit later. But really, it was just playing games and then going in after the game was over into the master's opening database and seeing what happened where.
Okay. That sounds fair. So what do you think got you to 1700? Would you say it's mostly your strategy work?
Yeah, so I went from like so 1700 was just this past year,
Oh, okay.
which is super nice. I would say most of it was openings at this point.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you
I
did some
started getting
strategy work,
positions. Yeah.
and then now you're kind of taking that strategy work, taking your tactical work, and thinking like, how does it fit into the openings that I'm playing?
Yeah, so really I'm taking the best practices strategy concepts that I know, like putting your knights in the outposts and open files and stuff like that. And now with my opening repertoire that I've been drilling through, it gives me middle game ideas and plans that I can fit those strategies that I know previously into.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So now it sounds like you're taking that knowledge and really turning it into very specific skill.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, that seems like a really important part of the process. Let me ask you, how much time are you able to spend? Are you spending like how much of your time are you spending a week or per day?
Sure. So I run a chess club, which I don't know if we can count that as studying. I am playing, but most of my people are just learning how the moves work. There's one other person who's maybe a little bit stronger than me, but otherwise it's mostly beginners. And since I'm facilitating the club, I'm not necessarily playing, but that's 2 hours. Sometimes I do get to play.
Oh,
And
wow.
then I coach 3 students right now at 1 hour a week. But outside of that, I try to get around 1 hour a day.
Okay. It's so like 1 hour for yourself, do some coaching, and then you're kind of around chess. Is that club then part of your job?
It is, yes, which is super
Oh,
awesome.
that's really cool. So you have like 2 hours a day, part of your job where you're connected to chess in some way.
2 hours a week, but
2 hours
yes.
a week. Gotcha. What do you suggest to these people that are beginners? Are you giving them books or videos, or what do you give to that like brand new player? Do you just tell them how the pieces move?
So yeah, I mean, got to know how the pieces move. And then I still recommend John Bartholomew's Climbing the Rating Ladder series. I honestly can't recommend it enough. It's something that I would listen to like almost every night, like to fall asleep to.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Whether or not I was picking things up on it in my sleep, probably not. But if
Like
you hear the same
actual
thing over and
osmosis.
over again. Yeah, exactly.
See, I try to sleep on books, but that doesn't do anything. I didn't even
Right.
think about like audiobooks is what I should be sleeping to.
And then if you're just coming to my club and you're a beginner, I'm teaching you the how the pieces move, and then I'm probably showing you our chess book collection in the library, which we picked up all of Sarah Wand's books. We have Bobby Fischer Teaches Chess, a lot of the classics.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Might I suggest getting Peter Giannatos' My First Chess Workbook?
That is a great idea. I've seen that book floating around.
Yeah, I think that'd be good for your club because it's just tactics.
One of my students has worked through it, I believe.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
When you say you work with these beginners at the club, are these adults or are these children?
It depends. Sometimes they're adults, sometimes there's kids. We have
That's cool.
some people that come in every week and you can see that they're getting better because they're playing over the board every week.
Yeah, for sure. That's really cool. So you get a nice mix of people. All right. You know what I haven't heard from you even once, not even a mention of is end games. Do you care about end games, sir?
I do, but I don't think, and maybe this is a bit much, I don't think people should spend a whole lot of time on them.
Okay.
I think that Jeremy Silliman's Endgame Manual is perfect, and that you can take your rating and then splice it in there and learn everything and below, and then you're good.
Okay. Is that the process you went through?
That's all I do. When I gain rating to get into a new bracket, I'll crack open that book and learn the next thing.
Yeah. I think that's what's so utterly genius about that book.
Oh, it's amazing. I see no benefit to learning the Bishop Knight checkmate if I've never seen it over thousands of games. I've been playing for 8 years.
Okay. I agree. I totally agree. And then over the board in Vegas, I got a game where I had Bishop Knight and a bunch of pawns, and they had like a bishop and more pawns. And I knew their plan. Their plan was to sack everything to get all my pawns to get me into a Bishop Knight and to test me if I could do it. What do you think, Chris? You think I would have been able to do it?
Absolutely.
Absolutely not. I had no idea how to do it.
No, it's tough. I was shopping around for coaches recently, and one of them in our introductory lesson was telling me about how important it was to learn this. And I just disagreed on such a fundamental level.
Yeah, it's tough. My current coach, after that game, he was like, "What do you mean you don't know how to do it?" I was like, "I don't know how to do it." And he's like, "I could show you in 5 minutes how to do it." And I was like, "Okay." And 20 minutes later, I was like, "I don't know how to do this. What are you talking about?"
I feel like once I get burned on it, I'll try to learn it. But until then, it's a waste of my time.
Right. Like, I kind of know how to do it, but there's no way I could actually do it in a game. What I'm hoping is I would start doing the W, and they would be like, all right, he knows how to do it. And then they would resign. That's
sure.
That's my plan. And I'd even look at him and I'd be like, the W? And they'd be like, oh, it's the W.
Yep, you got me.
That is my plan. All right. So for all the writers out there, I think the next book we need is called like the Complete Strategy Course. And it does a similar thing where it takes your rating level and it kind of like chunks out what strategy things you need to learn. I think that would be maybe impossible, but such a cool idea.
Yeah, or it could be like one of those videos that you might have seen where a professional in the field explains a concept to somebody, but at five different levels.
Yeah, okay. I haven't even seen this idea. That's such a great idea. Yeah, okay. Yep, that could work. Also, it's funny that I always go to books, right? Like, everyone else is like, books. I don't even know what a book is. So.
Hey, I'm a librarian. I love books.
All right. Yes, we're in the minority. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so I've heard a bit about like shopping for a new coach, and you have a new coach. What prompts you? It sounds like you've had a couple of coaches. What prompts you to change coaches? Like, what are you looking for in a coach when you change coaches? What's happening there?
Yeah, so the last coach that I was working with, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention him. He's also one of the bigger reasons that I hit my 1700 this year, which is my rating goal. Nice. But as it turns out, a lot of coaches have rating requirements that once you age out of a coach, you know, like there's not, maybe not much that they can teach you anymore. So my previous coach was advertising between 1600 and 2000 on Lead Chess, or maybe below 1600 to 2000. And I hit 2000 on Lead Chess. So right. I figured maybe it's time to move on. And he's a great person. And his name is YL Atia. He's on Twitter. Highly recommend him. Great coach.
Yeah. I've seen him. Is he the guy who has his daughters who are really moving up quick?
Yep. Polgar's in the making for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He seems like he'd be a great coach just the way he approaches it. So that's interesting. So was he agreeing with you? Was he like, yep, this is kind of like where I generally have people move on? Cause that's the trick, right? It's hard to tell a coach like, I think I'm better than where you can coach me, right? Like, how does one even broach that?
So I think he would have been capable of helping me a little bit further, mm-hmm. but I had to take a pretty significant break from our coaching sessions. So to me, it made more sense to kind of just start fresh.
Yep, that makes perfect sense. Okay, that's cool. I've had a similar situations where I've worked with several coaches that were great and I really enjoyed working with them. I'm sure I could have gotten more out of those interactions, but there was something specific I was looking for. And so it's kind of why I switched to the current coach that I have now.
Yep.
All right. So what is it you're looking for in a coach now? Take you to GM?
Not GM. So my very distant goal is to make you a CF expert. Okay. I'm 26 right now. We'll see if that's feasible. I sure hope so, but I'm not going to be too upset if we don't hit it. But that's my next, stretch goal.
Okay. What are
And
you at
getting
right now, USCF?
so I'm currently I don't have a USCF rating. The
Oh, so you're
closest
trying to go from 0 to 2,000.
which might sound very ambitious, but I don't necessarily need the title either. I'm looking for maybe the online equivalent,
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
which to me looks like around like 22, 2250 on chess.com and Lee Chess.
Okay. Yeah, that seems reasonable.
Yeah.
Okay. So, are you planning to get out to play over the board tournaments?
As soon as, so I recently finished grad school, which was a big,
Yeah.
time sink.
Library science?
Library science, yes.
Okay. Awesome.
Yep. And so traveling has not been a very big priority of mine. And my wife is doing her grad school right now too. So we're kind of locked around home for a little bit. And there's really no clubs nearby that offer USCF rated events. So
Gotcha.
it's kind of hard to get out there over the board. I might be able to do one or two tournaments a year, but that's
Okay.
not going to be quite enough.
Yeah, are you in like a small college town right now?
I'm in rural Virginia
Oh,
currently.
Virginia. Okay.
Yeah.
And so is the next step like you both graduate and now you find like your next landing place where you both can pursue, your careers?
Yeah. So after she graduates, we're looking to move. So
Gotcha.
it might be a consideration if there's a chess scene.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? As you're like, okay, is there good opera or theater? And you're like, listen, I don't care about any of that. Is there good chess?
I would settle for okay chess.
Yeah, I think having okay chess is really important. Good chess is kind of rare in the US, but I think okay chess is really nice. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, what is it that you're were looking for in your newest coach? We didn't quite get to that. Like, how did you decide like this is going to be the person? Or have you not even decided that and you're still auditioning people?
Yeah, so I just met with a coach today and I really enjoyed it. What my criteria is one, I've never had a coach where there wasn't at least some sort of language barrier.
Ah, okay.
And so that sometimes is not a big deal at all, but sometimes it's hard to understand
Yeah.
both ways. So with this coach, I specifically wanted someone who was affordable, but also that where there wasn't a big language barrier. And I think I might have found my person. And well, and they've got to be able to teach me stuff, right? And we have to get along during sessions, of course. Like that's really the important bit.
Okay.
And like for example, we just did our this first session and we looked at my opening repertoire to see if we were compatible with the stuff that he knew versus, the stuff that I play.
Okay.
And it looks good.
Nice. Okay. And is this person like titled at all, or is that not what you're looking for?
I don't necessarily care so much about whether or not they're titled because I'm an untitled coach myself. I get that you don't need to be a professional to teach somebody. And but this gentleman he's a life master.
Okay. That's cool. So they have, so it sounds like not only like the only nice thing about titles at all is it's like you have someone you can grow with a little bit longer. Whereas if they're like 1800, you're like, well, I'm pretty quickly going to be at your level, I hope.
Yes, and I shouldn't have to shop around. Like, if I am to make expert, I should not have to have another coach at this point. So I'm looking for my retirement home of coaches, if you
Okay, very nice. And it sounds like you found one. I will say it is such a fascinating thing with the global nature of chess. There are so many affordable, amazing coaches throughout the globe. And when my focus was on affordability, I found wonderful people. But for me, language barrier was less of an issue as much as it was time. Like I have very small time windows, and they're in an entirely different part of the globe. So it was very hard at times to match up those windows.
Yeah, it's tough, especially if you're working, a full-time job and have to
Yeah.
fit in, having a family and all that good stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I remember like one of my coaches would consistently be like, "Hey, I really need us to meet like 3 hours later or something." I was like, "I just literally cannot do that." Like
Right.
I would love to be able to do that. I'm so sorry that I cannot. So yeah, that can be really hard. Okay, well, it sounds like maybe you have your new coach. It sounds like you have a pretty clear goal in mind of expert. Any ideas of what you think it's going to take to get you to this goal?
So I think calculation is going to be a big deal. I know I'm talking about doing a lot of tactics, but to me, really, that's mostly pattern recognition.
Yeah.
You know, unless you get the crazy study like tactics that pop up. I find that I play very much on intuition, and so I don't really take a time to calculate out variations.
Mm-hmm.
So I think starting to do that would be very excellent. Anecdotally, another person who comes to my club is slightly stronger than me, and he's the total opposite, where he calculates everything.
Ah, okay.
And so our styles clash a little bit. And every time I play him, I just think, oh, if only I could calculate as good as you.
Yeah.
So like that's got to just be my next step.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Have you gotten any ideas of like what that's going to look like? How does one go about working on their calculation? Or is that something you're hoping your coach can kind of work with you on?
I'm hoping my coach can help me with it, but I think visualization is a big part too.
Mm,
so I'm okay. I'm working through cognitive chess right now, which is a blindfold book, essentially.
Yeah, I've got it right here. An interesting book. What I love about it is that like it has a regimen for each day, right? And the first part is like, what color squares are these? And you're like, come on, I can easily do that. And then the next one might be like, can a bishop on b3 take this knight on this square? And you're like, come on, I can do that. And like, okay, really? Here's a position, mate in three. And you're like,
yes.
Whoa, what?
Yep. I got my first mate in 3-1 about 3 days ago, 4 days ago, and they were just mate in twos up until that point. And I was like, oh no, you can't make me do this. But you know, you spend the allotted time. They give you 15 minutes per problem. And if you can't work it out, then look it up. But I've been doing pretty well with it so far.
That's cool. So you feel like visualization is going to be a big part of that ability to calculate.
I sure hope so.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Have you started doing any like longer puzzles? Have you gotten any books or anything to give you some calculation puzzles?
Not currently. I am working through the Yusupov series right now as well. And some of those have crazy long variations to them in their tests. So maybe I'm getting some of it there too.
Okay. A book that I think is fantastic is Think Like a Super GM by Mickey Adams. And I think sounds like you're probably ready for it. Like you won't crush all the puzzles or anything. But what's so amazing is it's kind of like amateur's mind, but with a hard calculation puzzle. So you get the puzzle, you work through it, and then some thousand is like, I'm going to tell you my ideas. And then, you know, 1500 gives you their ideas. And eventually Michael Adams walks and he's like, step aside, chumps. I'll tell you the real answer. But it's really cool. So what I used it for is to kind of see like, what is my thinking process like? Am I closer to like a master? Am I closer to the 1200? Like, where am I at in my own process? So not only am I stretching my abilities with this puzzle, but I'm getting this comparison opportunity.
Yeah, I appreciate the recommendation. I'm always really reluctant to pick up books that have GM in the title because it always feels like I am not the target audience for it because I will never think like a super GM.
Yeah, exactly. And I just kind of got over. And the problem is, it's like it gives you points, and you're just gonna have to get over that, right? Like just do the puzzles, and whatever points you get, sure, whatever. If it says you're bad at chess, then fine, you're bad at chess. You're just trying to get better.
Sure. Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, I've been recommending that book to everybody, so it's a good one. I think it'll help you with your calculation. Well, it sounds to me like you've made a lot of amazing progress. You have a clear goal you're working towards. You have a method set up to reach that goal. Chris, I think in a year we're going to be talking to you and you're going to be well on your way to this goal.
Hey, I sure hope so.
All right. Well, I feel like this has been a really insightful interview, and thanks so much. Is there any place people can reach you if they want to, you know, get some follow-up questions for you?
Yeah, of course. I am on X or Twitter as at a chess librarian.
Okay. Is that the main place people can get a hold of you?
That's it.
Nice. So here, this is funny. You say X. I never updated my phone that app. So it's still the bird and it still says Twitter. And
I am crazy jealous of you right now.
Like, I'm like 100 years in the past. Over here. You know, remember,
I don't think anyone calls it X really.
Yeah. I bring it up on my computer and there's a giant X on the screen. I'm like, what the? Oh, right. That's right. That's right. It's X. No, I forgot. All right. Well, Chris, thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate it. I think people are really going to enjoy your journey. For those of you out there, I hope this is the week where you gain 200 points and get your all-time high. And if it's not, and you're in a plateau or, oh my goodness, a pit of despair, I'm so sorry if that's you. Come back next week. We'll have another guest. We'll have another conversation, and I'll see you then. Goodbye, everybody.